Get Sleepy is a production of Slumber Studios and is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors and premium members. If you'd like to listen ad-free and access weekly bonus episodes, extra-long stories, and our entire back catalogue, you can try out Premium free for 7 days by following the link in the episode notes. Now, a quick word from our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Get Sleepy, where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. I'm your host, Thomas. Thanks so much for joining us at the start of a new week and a new month. But don't worry, there are no April Fools in store tonight. We really are returning to one of the most popular mini-series we've had on the show. We'll revisit a family unlike any other, the Pockets. Unbeknownst to the humans that they share a house with, this tiny family resides in a doll's house in the living room. We'll observe the Pockets as they go about their morning, and we'll meet the family's most recent addition, a tiny sausage dog named Hercules. It was written by Joe, and will of course be read by Simon. If you haven't heard the first two adventures with this family yet, you can still listen along and enjoy tonight's story, but feel free to go back and listen to them another time. They were released on March 27th and 29th of last year. So, before we meet this charming little family once again, let's take a few minutes to relax and unwind. Find a position that feels comfortable and close your eyes as soon as you're ready. Now, let's try a short gratitude practice, spreading love and thanks across the body. If you like, you can place a hand on your heart as we begin by focusing on the feet and toes. You might say the words "thank you" aloud or in your head as you thank your feet, your toes, and your ankles for all they do to carry you through the world. Then, let the gratitude spread upwards through the legs and into the thighs. Thank your stomach, chest, and shoulders for all that they do to help you through every day. And say thank you to your heart that beats within your chest. You may even feel it against your palm right now. Allow the gratitude to spread to the muscles of your back. Then give thanks to your arms and your hands and fingers. They help you complete a number of tasks, and it's good to acknowledge that. Lastly, come up to your neck and head, allowing gratitude to fill you completely. Send thanks to the eyes, ears, nose and mouth, and to that miraculous thing, the mind. Our final thank you goes to the breath, coming in and going out. It keeps us alive and thriving without any instruction. It's the background magic to our daily lives. Now, hopefully you're feeling relaxed and ready to begin tonight's tale. So I'll make way for Simon as we rejoin the lovable Pocket family. This is where our story begins.
The terracotta walls of the living room are covered with artwork. The pictures were placed there by Miss Granger, who moved into the building over a year ago. A kind and gentle woman in her mid-30s, she's been a breath of fresh air in the two-bedroomed semi. So too has her lovely daughter, a girl of 6, almost 7. The youngster is responsible for much of the artwork, colourful paintings she did at school. Of course, the Grangers aren't the only ones who live there, though mother and daughter both think that they are. They share the house with a family of tiny people who live happily behind the living room sofa. The Pocket family are tiny indeed. None are much taller than your average pin. Before the Grangers moved in, they lived in a tissue box, which was hidden away at the back of a cupboard. Since then, their circumstances have greatly improved, and they've relocated to the young girl's dollhouse behind the sofa. It's 3 floors high, and it even has a lift. To the Pockets, it's a mansion. The Pockets could be happy anywhere, whether sleeping in a matchbox or a crevice in the sofa. But the dollhouse is a dream come true. The interior decor is like a country cottage. Wooden beams line every ceiling, and many of the walls display floral patterns, matching the upholstery of the chairs and sofas. Ma and Pa sleep in the master bedroom on the uppermost floor. There's a large double bed with magnolia sheets, a match for the curtains and the room's floral border. The children's rooms are just across the hallway. Matilda's is purple and Joe's is mostly blue. Joe's zigzag bedding is untidy as usual, and there's an imprint in the fabric where someone has been sleeping. It's a favourite spot of their new pet, Hercules, a ray of sunshine in the form of a sausage dog. He scampered into their lives just a few weeks ago when Pa and Joe found him wandering through the kitchen. Quickly, He won the hearts of all the Pocket family, being a sweet-natured animal. He's gentle and loving. Matilda named him Hercules, after the famous Greek hero known for his strength and many adventures. It's a funny name for such a small creature. Hercules is the size of the end of a matchstick. He's currently sprawled out in one of his favorite spots, in front of the fireplace in the dollhouse living room. Just nearby are the Pocket family, seated for breakfast around an upturned bottle top. Covering it is a tablecloth of white tissue paper with crockery and cutlery shaped from tinfoil. The Pockets live off crumbs from the Grangers' kitchen table, which is more than enough to satisfy their appetites. A single piece of cereal would take up the whole table, and a droplet of milk would last the family a week. Today, the children drink freshly squeezed orange juice, while the adults enjoy cups of strong, milky coffee, and they munch on pieces of buttery croissant. Joe and Pa spread jam onto theirs. The nearby fire provides the soundtrack to breakfast. It crackles and pops like a real log fire, with bright orange flames that are reflected across the dog's chestnut coat. In between bites, the family make light conversation, mostly discussing their plans for the day. The children are homeschooled, their parents being the teachers, and they follow a curriculum that is broad and varied. Today's lessons start with maths, followed by woodwork and orienteering. Lessons begin before the humans are awake, as soon as the sun rises. When breakfast is over and the family are satisfied, Ma and Pa clear the table, then head down to the kitchen to tidy up. Pa sings ditties as he cleans. Meanwhile, Joe and Matilda are sent to make their beds, to change out of their pajamas, and brush their teeth. They do this using human toothpaste. It's white and minty and streaked with colour. The Pockets make supply runs maybe 3 times a week, gathering useful items that the humans would never miss. Nothing of the Grangers ever goes to waste, whether food scraps from the table or globs of toothpaste in the bathroom. Things got even better when the Pockets moved into the dollhouse, because now they have access to their very own vehicle. They can drive about in their glamorous pink doll car and transport supplies back to the mansion. For now, though, the Pockets have all that they need, and Pa is ready to begin his maths lesson. This takes place in the dollhouse living room, where the breakfast table now becomes a classroom desk. Pa likes to begin with a little mental maths, testing the children on their multiplication tables. These quick-fire questions get the brain warmed up, like stretches before a workout. To Joe and Matilda, it feels like a game, and they delight in the challenge of outdoing each other's scores. Yesterday, it was Joe who got the most correct answers. But today, it's his sister who reigns victorious. The children have class books made by their mother. The covers have been decorated with scraps of wrapping paper, and they use tiny pencils that they made themselves under careful instruction in woodwork class. Joe and Matilda open their books to their most recent work, where the pages are filled with neatly drawn pictures. They've been working on 3D shapes, learning to label their names and features. Today, Pa explains, they're going to apply what they've learned and go about the dollhouse on a shape-spotting mission they need to find 3D shapes in real-world objects, making notes in their books as they move about the house. The children decide to work on this project together. Four eyes, after all, are better than two. They'll also be joined by Hercules, as the little dog can't bear to miss out on adventure. And so, the children explore the dollhouse, scanning each room for 3D shapes. The cupboards in the bedroom, they realize, are cuboids, and the bedside tables are cubes. On Joe's bedside table is a tiny globe. Both children agree that it's shaped like a sphere. So too is the colourful beach ball that they find at the back of Matilda's wardrobe. Hercules proves to be a great shape detective, leading the children to the downstairs bathroom. He sits and barks outside a closed cupboard. Inside, the children find batteries shaped like cylinders. For this, the dog receives a lot of love and appreciation. He's patted and stroked and called a very good boy. He wears a proud expression, delighted to please his owners, as the group move to the kitchen. There, they find a cupboard filled with cone-shaped party hats, and in the fridge, they note a wedge of prism-shaped cheese. Hercules finds a speck of leftover croissant. It's no shape in particular, but it's a yummy second breakfast. Meanwhile, Pa stays seated at the table, listening to a channel on the dollhouse radio. This miniature device sits on the mantel above the fireplace, and it plays real stations. The volume is so low that it's inaudible to humans, but just the right level for tiny ears to hear. It's accompanied by the crackle and pop of the fireplace, so it sounds like a record being spun on a deck. Ma soon appears with refills of coffee and takes a seat beside her husband. Her favorite soap is beginning on the radio. Pa loves it too, though he often pretends not to. She's brought some knitting, a blanket that she's working on. Ma loves to knit as she listens to her stories. Her knitting needles are plant stems, cut, dried, and varnished, and her material is cotton thread, offcuts from the humans. When the children have finished exploring the house, they return to the living room and show Pa their work. They've successfully matched each shape to an object, all except the 3D pyramid. Pa is pleased with the children's work. They've tried their best and worked as a team. Perhaps they'll spot a pyramid when they next leave the dollhouse in their orienteering lesson, which is right after woodwork. First, the children need to work on their walking poles, an essential tool for getting around the house. These repurposed toothpicks are a few years old, and they're in need of maintenance and tender, loving care. Pa demonstrates how to sand down the poles so that the surface is free of pesky splinters. He carves the base and sharpens the end point. That way, the pole will stick nicely in the ground. The children mimic their father's actions, and he swells with pride as he watches them work. They use scraps of sandpaper to smooth down the poles, one of many things they collected when the Grangers were redecorating. Then, they use the ends of nail files to sharpen their poles. It's slow work, but actually quite relaxing. Joe likes the sweeping sound of the file on the toothpick, while Matilda enjoys the texture of the smoothened wood. The final step is to polish the walking pole, dipping a piece of dust cloth into golden, gooey wax. This is rubbed carefully into the surface of the wood. It's massaged in using circular movements. Soon, the poles appear completely transformed. Ma pauses knitting to admire their handiwork, and her smile grows wider when she looks over to Pa. He's upgraded her walking pole and placed a ribbon around the top. The family will get to try out their poles in the very next lesson, orienteering. In this class, the children practice navigating the house, keeping each other safe and avoiding getting lost. To a human, this concept might seem somewhat laughable. Imagine getting lost in a two-bedroomed house. But what may seem average or even small to many humans is monumentally larger through the eyes of the pockets. Moving through the house requires equipment. Alongside their poles, the pockets each have a backpack. Inside are essentials like ropes for climbing. They're made from safety pins and picture hooks tied to string. Pa volunteers to walk with Hercules so that the children can focus on leading the way. Their challenge is to navigate to the kitchen table through the living room and the hallway. The family leave the dollhouse with Joe and Matilda out in front. They walk gracefully past the flashy pink car, striding with their poles like expert hikers. They know how to walk around the brown leather sofa, which is so massive from their perspective that it blocks out the view. They turn left and left again, curving around its base until more of the room comes into view. Now they see the flat-screen TV, a gigantic cinema screen to their eyes. It hangs on the wall opposite the sofa, in front of the Granger's walnut coffee table. The plan is to climb up onto the coffee table. It's the quickest way to cross the living room. Joe goes first, swinging his rope like a lasso and throwing it hook first up towards the table. He feels the picture hook catch and slowly begins to climb up the rope. He arrives minutes later on top of the table and retrieves the hook from an indentation in its surface. The rest of the family then follow his lead, Pa going last and accompanied by the dog. Hercules sits happily in a handmade dog carrier worn on Pa's chest like a front pack for a baby. Pa pats the dog's head when they arrive at the top. He's such a good boy and so well behaved. Then Pa follows the family, who walk diagonally across the table. On their way, they pass the Granger's fish tank. It's an aquarium full of colourful creatures, twisted driftwood, and exotic plant life. Matilda points out that the tank is a cuboid, remembering her shapes from this morning's lesson. Joe scans the tank for his favourite fish, a ruby-red beauty that he calls Rose. Instead, he catches sight of an unfamiliar ornament, a miniature replica of one of the pyramids of Egypt. The family pause to observe this monument. Its bronze surface is etched to look like brickwork. It's the last 3D shape that they had left to find, and more marvelous than they could ever have imagined. Better still is that the ornament is hollow, with doors visible at the front and back. Rose, the fish, swims through it, her tail fluttering like a flower petal in the breeze. Hercules grins in his carrier. He loves to watch the fish swim by. Eventually, the family are ready to move on, and amble once again towards the corner of the table. Now, it's Matilda's time to go first. So, she throws her rope towards the bottom of the doorway. The first time, she misses, but the second time, she gets it. The hook catches securely near the bottom of the doorframe. With the rope angled towards the ground, Matilda lifts her pole above her head. She then uses it as a makeshift zip wire, gliding towards the ground. Matilda feels as if she's flying. She sails through the air above the floorboards and arrives at the doorway, happy and gleeful. Pa is the last to join the family, and the others watch his journey from the glossy floorboards. They laugh at the sight of Hercules in the front pack, gaping as he looks all around. Back on the ground, he's brought out of his carrier and put on a lead to walk beside Pa. He wags his tail and trots along the floor, sniffing happily at everything in his path. Soon, the family are out of the living room and onto the carpet of the Granger's front hallway. They walk among fibres as tall as they are, in a cream-coloured jungle of lovely, soft carpet. All are grateful for their newly improved poles. They're invaluable tools for crossing such terrain. Joe leads, passing the stairs and turning left around a corner. From there, the route is straight on towards the kitchen. It's now visible in the distance, and each step reveals more of the kitchen floor. In places, it's lit by sunlight from the windows, giving it the appearance of a sun-soaked beach, the golden surface twinkling. It's a dazzling view for the family to walk towards, and a useful marker to guide the way. Soon, the pockets are on the kitchen floor, and the family pause to bask in the sunshine. Ma and Pa hug their children, proud of how they navigated the way like expert guides. It's now that they hear familiar sounds. The Grangers are moving in the bedrooms upstairs. That's the signal that it's lunchtime for the pockets, and time that they were moving to a place out of sight. Ma and the children begin moving towards the skirting board, to the crack in the wall where they usually eat. But today, Pa has other ideas, and leads them instead to a space beneath the cabinet. Matilda suspects that a surprise is waiting, and though Pa tries to hide it, his gleeful expression gives him away. It soon becomes clear that he's been secretly busy, transforming the area beneath the kitchen cabinet. He explains to the family that just a few days ago, he'd been out wandering when the humans came home. He hid beneath the cabinet as the girl sat at the table. She was working on a project, sticking objects to a collage. Pa fell asleep while he was waiting and woke hours later when the humans were gone. They left behind a treasure trove of brightly coloured items, feathers, felt, silk, and sequins. One by one, Pa dragged the items beneath the cabinet, determined to create a whole new room. And this is the end result. The floor is dotted with stunning felt rugs in every colour of the rainbow. They feel luxurious underfoot. Hercules is already sniffing at one and rubbing his snout into the felt fabric. To the right of the room is a turquoise feather, a soft new sofa, large enough to seat the entire family. Cream-coloured silk is folded beside it, a deluxe blanket should they ever get cold. Nearby is a sequin, pink and glossy. It's the perfect dining table. And around it are high back chairs made from pipe cleaners. The family gaze at the room, and after a moment of silence, they turn to Pa. What a wonderful secret for him to be hiding. This will surely become their regular lunch spot. The room itself is only part of the surprise. The other part is lunch, already on the table. It's the remnants of the humans' dinner when they treated themselves to takeaway pizza. Hercules is very partial to sliced pepperoni, and cold pizza is a family favourite. There's barely a tenth of a slice of pizza, but it's more than enough to fill everyone's plate. The family sit down around their new pink table, its surface so shiny that they can see their reflections. They sink into the fabric of their wonderful new chairs, the cotton of the pipe cleaners as soft as velvet. The pockets hear the humans in the kitchen. Mum and daughter are sitting down to breakfast. If only they knew of the merry group beneath them, making happy conversation between mouthfuls of pizza. Once the plates are empty, Joe and Matilda clear up before playing a game of The Floor is Lava. They attempt to cross the room without touching the ground, stepping across the felt rugs, which are arranged like stepping stones. When the game is over, they head to the sofa, joining Ma and Pa on the turquoise feather. They sit in between their parents, as comfy as can be. Ma unfolds the silk blanket and passes its end over to Pa. Between them, they stretch it right across until the entire family is under the silk. Joe says he's never felt anything like the feather. It's the loveliest thing that he's ever sat down on. Ma and Matilda both gush about the blanket, while Pa is content to just sit and smile. The family will stay here, relaxing on the sofa, until they hear the sound of the humans going out. That will be the sign to start afternoon lessons. Today, that's English, followed by crafts and cookery. For now, though, they're content to enjoy their surroundings, to talk and laugh beneath the silk blanket. Soon, they're joined by Hercules, who is apparently as fond of silk as they are. He clambers up with his short little legs and takes a seat in the middle of the blanket. He finds a spot next to Joe and Matilda, lying between their legs with his paws outstretched. He's asleep within minutes, turned over on his back with his comically large ears flopping out. Whether it's the sight of this snoozing canine or an after effect of their morning exertions, the family begin to feel tired, and a series of yawns fans out across the sofa. The feather curves with their bodies, supporting their tiny frames from head to toe, while the silk blanket is warm and cozy and sends waves of comfort rippling across them. The family begin to nod off, one after another. And soon, they're all napping. The pockets and their dog curled up beside them.